Online Trading Academy's core strategy is patented and built on the timeless principles of supply and demand. Text Cairo to 57682 to learn how you can trade stocks using this patented core strategy. Text Cairo to 57682.
This is our number two.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
Oh, it's crazy news day, man. It's a world of news in a tidy little 15-minute package just for you. Welcome to our Fastest 15. I got a comment on that story you just had about the, it's a great grandpa, right? Who
yes.
put duct tape around what is a rather severely autistic little boy.
Yes.
And I heard the soundbite you played from the friend of the great grandpa, Frank Messina.
We know this man. He's a very gentle, very, very gentle and kind man.
And he said the suspect was trying to protect the kid.
He was trying to smash out the back window of the car with his feet. He was talking about, or maybe running out into traffic. And so the great grandfather, the only thing he could do is to try to keep him from hurting himself.
That was a soundbite Ursula just had, and this friend said he was just trying to keep the kid from hurting himself.
They can investigate all they want. I know the guy, and he was just trying to keep the kid from hurting himself.
And I heard a couple of soundbites on Cairo 7 last night from Loretta Cool from the Tacoma Police.
Duct tape is never an appropriate restraint for any child.
I was a little shocked that the Tacoma Police spokesperson was saying that, and they're investigating this great-grandpa for child abuse. I saw an episode of Cops. I watched a lot of TV after my surgery 2 weeks ago. And I was watching an episode of Cops, and they handcuffed a guy, put him in the back of the police car, and he was trying to kick out the back window of the police car. And what do the police do then? They put on what's called a hobble, where they, you know, secure the handcuffed hands, and they put chain and, you know, like handcuff your feet. Feet cuff you. And they put a chain between the two so you can't kick out your feet. How is the tool that the cops use for somebody who's trying to kick out a cop car, how is that acceptable? And yet the cops say a great grandpa who does that. And look.
I'm guessing, though, that what the comments made by the police department earlier in the week were before they knew all the details.
I hope so.
Yeah, I am guessing on that one.
Because I'm also thinking, you're a great grandpa. You raised your kids. You maybe had a role in your grandkids' life.
Right.
And now you are, you know, and this is an incredible challenge for families who have
yes.
kids on the spectrum and, you know, especially the ones who are most, you know, severely impacted by their autism. And you're a great grandpa. You're probably at absolute wit's end. And then you have Tacoma Police saying that they're going to investigate this guy for child abuse, which is a horrible accusation to tag on anybody. Even if you're, you know, they don't go through with it. This guy is now in these stories as being investigated for child abuse when he might have just been doing what, I mean, a guy at his wit's end trying to deal with his great grandson. Was trying to do. And I was shocked that Tacoma Police said that they were doing that, investigating him for child abuse.
Yeah, but, and again, I think the soundbite was from a little bit earlier in the investigation. Now, one might argue, too, even if your child is on the autism spectrum, is it appropriate to tie him up in duct tape?
No. I mean, it's not ideal, but if that's a tool cops use for somebody who kicks out a back window of a car,
right.
then I don't know how you can, you know, throw a parent or a grandparent or great-grandparent in prison for doing essentially exactly what the cops do in a similar situation.
Yeah, I'll be curious if the great-grandpa actually faces any charges.
Boy, I will, too. I will, too. Have you been able to follow, because we've been on the air the whole time, the Seattle City Council meeting that's going right now?
Well, I'm trying to listen to bits and parts as I go in and out of the studio. There's just so much going on with this Amazon story.
Well, yeah, we've just gotten a statement from Mayor Jenny Durkan.
Which I just had moments ago, and I just threw
right.
that on the newscast.
And in its entirety, from our small businesses to our startups, our jobs are critical to our city's economy, budget, and growth. Our workers add to the vitality of our region and support our arts, cultural, and nonprofit community. I'm deeply concerned about the impact this decision will have on a large range of jobs, from our building trades to restaurant workers to nurses, manufacturing jobs, and tech workers. And if you are just tuning in, Amazon has just announced in the last couple of hours that they are going to suspend plans to add 8,000 jobs in Seattle. They are suspending construction of 1 million square feet of new office space. And they are pausing construction on a 17-story tower. They may just sublease it, or sublease rather than occupy a skyscraper. And all of this is in response to the business head tax that Sawant and Mike O'Brien and most of the city council has been pushing for.
Dory, just real quick, yeah, just to give an idea how much this would potentially, this head tax would cost Amazon. Do you, so if it's $500 per employee per year.
Right.
And if they have, what, 40,000 at least?
Yeah, yeah, $20 million a year is the figure I've been hearing that they would have to pay for this head tax. And the whole tax would collect $75 million. So one company would be responsible for more than a quarter of the tax, but Amazon's not going to pay it. And everybody says, okay, so what should we do about this crisis? Well, first of all, the city council has no clue. They can't manage anything. They couldn't manage to put potatoes in a paper bag. They certainly cannot manage a homelessness crisis. What you have are a bunch of idealist zealots on the city council who have zero real-world practical life experience. And the more we spend on homelessness, the worse the homelessness crisis gets. So everybody says, so what's the solution? Here it is. Take the existing $200 million a year we are already spending on homelessness. You provide the mental health and the drug and alcohol counseling and the job training for anybody who wants it. If they are resolved to get clean and get a job, you provide them the housing during that transition. For the majority of people on the streets who do not want any help, take about $10 million of that $200 million and hire a bunch of cops and start enforcing our drug laws and start putting people in jail for injecting heroin on downtown bus benches. Stop the nonsense of allowing tents on every square foot of public space. Announce that we have vagrancy laws and that we will clear you out if you put up a tent and you're not going to get 72 hours. And send the word around the country as all of the drug addicts and alcoholics who don't want to get clean, who don't want help. I want to provide compassion. I want to provide services. I want to provide housing. I want to provide transition for everybody who wants help and wants to get their life back and wants to eventually have some sovereignty over this condition that is plaguing them. But for the majority, and I say majority because every time there's a homelessness sweep, they have these teams, these Compass teams, that go out and they offer all of those resources. And the last one they did, 90% of the people refused all help. And you tell that 90%, sorry, Seattle is no longer going to be the dumping ground for the nation. And we're going to enforce our drug laws. We're going to actually put people in jail if they are using heroin out in the middle of the streets or smoking crack or using meth. And we'll spend a tiny fraction of that $200 million on law enforcement and clearing out the tents. Now, of course, they'll never do this. But if you want a solution to this problem, I just gave it to you. And we wouldn't have to spend a penny more than what we're spending now. Now, we have people who are 180 degrees different from me in their perspective, and they all work for the city council. And the reason they're 180 degrees different is because they have no real world experience. They have no life experience. They've never worked in the private sector. And they believe that government is the solution to everybody's life. And I know the reality that you are the solution to your life. And we should provide you help getting to that destination. And we have to have zero tolerance because we are attracting the people who have, the word is out. You want to use heroin, Seattle will give you a place to live and you can keep shooting up in the housing they provide. There's the solution. Will it ever happen? Of course not. Not as long as you have mentally ill people who are in the city council. City council probably has more mental illness than the people living on the streets around here. Up next in the Fastest 15. I got a little worked up there. I was on a roll.
Wow.
I was on a roll. I got to talk about this house in Ballard, though.
The one that,
yeah.
Yeah, where you would prank the guy who owns it.
I just told the story, and in case people didn't hear, where I grew up in Ballard, the dead end street, there was a guy who lived right next door to me named Dick. Never was there a more appropriate name for a person. And Dick, briefly, when I was about 7, 8 years old, Dick had a wife and two little girls living with him, and there would be fights. Summer nights, there would be just physical beatings that I would wake up at 2 in the morning, closing time to fights, and I would crawl out into the yard and sit behind a bush, and I would watch these physical beatings.
Man, that's too much for a child.
And the wife and the two little girls left shortly thereafter, but Dick continued to live there until just a few months ago. Because after my mom passed away, my brother and his wife, they took care of my mom in her final couple years, and they took over my mom's house. They just sold a month or two ago. But Dick was in his 90s, still drinking every single day, allegedly. I guess I should say allegedly. And we on this dead-end street, there was always a parking dispute because the guy who lived across the street, Clarence believed their property line came to the middle of the road. And so when we parked right next to our fence, Clarence believed that we were parked on the street right-of-way. So he would park out in the middle of the street so Dick couldn't get to his house. And Dick would blame us. So I'd be sitting there. I remember one night, summer night, like 80 degrees. I have a friend over. I'm 16 years old. 2 a.m. We're sitting in the basement. And all of a sudden, I hear, G.D., G.D. Except he's saying the words. I don't want to say the words. G.D., Icelanders. And he's screaming because we're just parked in front of our house. And
for anyone who doesn't know, you're of Icelandic.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Heritage.
Icelandic heritage. I could have gone after him for hate crimes if I'd known any better. And when I was a little kid, when I was about 10 years old, Mom was playing bingo many nights. And I would call Pizza Haven and Pizza Hut and Chicken Delight and Yellow Cab and Gray Top Cab. And I would send pizzas and chicken and taxi cabs to Dick's house. And then I'd sit in my upstairs window and I'd laugh as he would drunkenly open the door to the steady parade.
I feel like you're giving children ideas right now.
Okay, kids,
don't do this.
I'm not telling
you. What a terrible child you were.
Well,
but you know what? I also feel very sorry for you, Dory, because that's a lot to take in as a youngster.
Exactly. When people want to know, why did I turn out the way I did? For crying out loud, have a little human compassion for my childhood. So anyway, last night, I dozed off, and then I wake up at about 1 a.m., and I thought, oh, I'll get caught up on the evening news. And I turn on Channel 7 News on my DVR, and I see this story. Let me open this up.
Mold. You have to wear a mask just to go inside, and it'll still cost you $775,000.
I sit bolt upright in my bed. And I go, that's Dick's house. That's Dick's house on the Cairo 7 News.
Probably still has those pizza boxes that you sent over at his house.
Probably.
Probably still stacked up in his basement.
I might be the source of the black mold.
Cairo 7's David Solano is live in Ballard next to that home, which gives us a jaw-dropping new perspective on Seattle's housing market.
So David Solano's right next to the home. He's standing in front of my childhood home.
You're like, I was hiding behind that bush one night.
Yeah, that's where I watched the horrors.
Again, $775,000 with black mold inside, and still this place considered a hot property. Take a look at over here. We went to go check out this 3-bedroom and 1-bath home, and then within minutes found somebody ready to pay that kind of cash.
So this home is so filled with black mold that, and by the way, I don't know how much I should say about my brother had to help the guy that I was just talking about just a few months ago because he had fallen in his lawn and was living in this kind of squalor. So anyway,
I have a funny feeling, though. Now there's going to be a ton of looky-loos just to check out the house where
Dory used to send pizza.
She lives next door and can't believe it.
I mean, so much that I sent that link to all my friends. And I was like, yeah, it's a, you know, steep stairs, black mold.
But yes, it's going for $775,000.
So you can't even go in and look at this house unless you're wearing a mask.
You can't have a hazmat suit.
So then the question, they interviewed a guy who said, well, remediation, maybe it's 850 to 100,000.
Yeah, I think they're just talking about just tear it down because it has a view.
Yeah.
I think the house itself is worth 90,000 bucks.
I wonder what the dirt is worth. Because my mom and dad, back in the 50s, the house next door, and it's, you know, there's been a big add-on since I lived there. But my mom and dad paid, I think, $6,000.
Well, I think the answer to your question is the property is appraised at about $670,000, the whole thing, including the building. And I think the building is about $90,000. So it's all property.
Well, and if you remediate the mold problem, it's going to be $900,000. But, I mean, think about that. My mom and dad paid $6,000, and these houses are worth $800,000 while filled with black mold now. It's just...
I mean, the median price for a home in Seattle is $770,000.
Well, and aren't the property taxes per year more than the cost of the house?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The property taxes are way more than the purchase price of the house back then.
I don't know if they're trying to raise the price. I mean, if I were trying to sell a house, I may minimize that a little bit.
But even with that list price, Brian Murphy came to take a cautious look.
We have a little one, and so we'd want to make sure any precautions we took there would were taken into account.
Man, the fact that that's the kind of housing market we have, that a black mold-filled house.
Yeah, well, there are no houses available, so even black mold is not going to stop anybody desperate to get a house.
So anyway,
I think the property value just went up because you just said it was your neighbor.
I don't know if that adds any value. I'm not sure.
We'll see.
Well, at least the open house is going to be a lot busier this weekend.
Neighbor of the original.
I was a little creep, though. I was such a lousy kid, man. I just.
I think you were bored. I think you had.
Oh, I had a very active mind, Ursula. I would just sit and do prank calls either by myself or with a friend. And our favorite one was we would just pull out the phone book, and he would be on the extension. We'd do this at my friend Todd's house. He'd be on the extension, and my voice hadn't changed. I was like 10, 11 years old, so I still had kind of a high-pitched voice. So I could pass for a female operator. And I would say, hey, I have a collect call from Todd. I don't know any Todd. And I go, Todd, are you sure this is the right number? Yeah, I'm positive. And then I would say, okay, well, I just need to explain to you that there is a 50-cent charge now for rejected collect calls. What do you mean? I go, I'm sorry, sir. Decision made way above me. But when you see it on your bill, I just wanted you to understand that when you turn down a collect, which is kind of a sophisticated little prank.
I was going to say, did you say you were 10 or 12?
Yeah, about 10. It was before my voice changed. It was when I was about 10. I would tell people they're about to get this 50-cent charge for rejecting a collect call, and they
Couldn't you just
go join ballistic.
A Boy Scout troop. Keep yourself busy.
No, this is my childhood, Ursula, and I just loved every second of it. It was just fantastic. Okay, and that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast. Dory's Fastest 15.
You give us 15 minutes, we'll give you the world. Hey, our buddy Dave Wagner from Channel 7, Cairo 7 News. He's got a great story on how local people are fighting back against the excess of government. He's going to tell us all about it next. One of the things we talk about an awful lot is the crazy overreach of local government. And I tell you what, it would be a lot worse if there weren't some people out there who are willing to stand up against the system and fight back against the politicians. And our buddy Dave Wagner over at Cairo 7 News, he's going to profile a local attorney coming up this afternoon and evening. A local attorney who's had incredible success standing up against the city of Seattle when it's been trying to overreach. And Dave Wagner joins me here in the studio. Hey, Dave, great to see you.
Good to see you too, Dory.
Okay, tell me about this lawyer who takes on the man on a regular basis.
Yeah, his name is Ethan Blevins, and he's an attorney out of Bellevue. So he's with something called the Pacific Legal Foundation, a group of conservative attorneys nationwide. and they take on what they believe is overreach by government. Mm-hmm. And it may be city, state, county, that type
of
thing. Yeah,
I've had them on my show many times.
Sure.
Yeah.
And so Ethan believes that Seattle is kind of ground zero for this, that there's not a more progressive city in the country and not a city that's committing more overreach, in his words, yeah, than the city of Seattle. So what he does, and yesterday he took on, sued once again the city of Seattle, and this was over a landlord's ability to ask a tenant about their criminal background. He believes that they should be able to do that. And we've talked to people in Seattle, including a landlord who wants to know, she wants to know, she considers herself a progressive, and she wants to know who she's renting to. She wants to make sure that it's safe for her.
Yeah.
And she's had a past of domestic violence. So she wants to make sure she feels safe about who she rents to.
Well, let me talk a little bit about the craziest part of that getting into law. The person who signed that you can't check criminal background, the person who signed that into law was Ed Murray. Ed Murray, when he had man after man accusing him of child rape, he stood before the media and said, you can't believe any of their stories. Look at their criminal background. They can't be trusted. And then Ed Murray, weeks later, signs a bill that tells landlords, oh, you can't take a person's criminal background into account when you're deciding who to rent to, which to me was the all-time act of hypocrisy that I'd ever seen.
You know, it's not just that, but it's also an income tax by the city. It's the democracy vouchers that people are concerned about. It's the snooping through people's garbage and checking on to make sure that they're properly composting. Those are the kind of things that we're finding an increasing number of people concerned about and believe that this is a clear overreach on the part of the city.
Yeah, well, let's go through all of these. So the criminal background, landlords want to be able to check and see who they're renting to. There's another landlord law that just got flipped by the same guy, right? Ethan Blevins?
That's right.
And this was the first come, first serve. Another one that I've talked about a lot because I had a landlord on my show. And he said, when I'm interviewing a prospective tenant, I have one of my employees go and look at their car. And if the car is trashed, I know that they're going to trash my apartment and I don't want to rent to them. Under this proposed law, he wouldn't have had that discretion. And that was another case where, you know, telling landlords that they cannot use some subjective criteria in deciding who they want to rent to. It's their own property, for crying out loud.
And one of the landlords we talked to said, you know, listen, this really does not benefit the people that it's intended to benefit. This is not going to benefit necessarily the poor and disenfranchised, because if there's a good place to rent, it's difficult sometimes for those who are poor or have a hard time getting around or working paycheck to paycheck and need to be at a job. They can't just up and leave their job and go be first in line.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily, in their estimation, benefit the very people it's intended. Now, Ethan Blevins, that attorney from Bellevue who has successfully sued 3 out of 4 times the city of Seattle, he believes that the intentions of Seattle City Council, they're well-intended what they're doing, but they're just missing the mark. And again, he believes it's overreach and unconstitutional.
Does he really believe they're well-intended? I mean, if he's a conservative, because I don't. I don't believe in the righteousness of their intent with many of these things.
He believes that they're trying to do right by their constituents. And in Ethan's estimation, there's no more progressive city than the city of Seattle. What we are finding, though, at the same time in talking to people, and I've talked to a lot of people in the city of Seattle over the past couple of years about how Seattle has changed. And one of the biggest frustrations they have is the selective enforcement of the laws in this city. Again, you know, you may get ticketed for parking 5 minutes over the time, but yet there are RVs that are parked on the street for over a year,
right,
in the same position. There is open use of heroin on the streets. Granted, it's a terrible problem. It's very difficult to fix and to find solutions to this. But there's frustration that, there's open air drug use and we have tourists coming into the city. And
sure,
what kind of impression does that give? What kind of impression does the trash on the streets give? Again, it's the frustration I'm hearing is not that these people aren't compassionate who are concerned. It's that they're frustrated that the city is not doing more. They want the city to do the right things and not do the things that are, in their estimation, inconsequential and really miss the target.
Well, look, justice is supposed to be blind. 7 people can lay down in the middle of the street and gridlock the region for 6.5 hours, a business person jogging across in the middle of a block can get a jaywalking ticket. I mean, yeah, all that stuff makes no sense.
Yeah, we did talk to an architect here in town, and he's really frustrated because, you know, if he were to build a small structure on a sidewalk somewhere, he would be fined every single day.
I did that 3 weeks ago.
I know you did.
I had Seattle police at the end of my show. I had two police cars in our parking lot and the impetus was the structure that was right across from you guys at Cairo 7.
Yeah, and I think that's what we're hearing in terms of increasing frustration. It's not that Seattle City Council is attempting to do something. They just feel they're focusing on the kind of issues that they really should not be involved
right.
in. They ought to be focusing on the big issues. And there's a lot of money going into these solutions in this city, but nothing, I wouldn't say nothing, but a lot of things aren't being solved.
Well, and another one that the guy you're profiling, Ethan Blevins, that he won was the city wanted to go through people's trash to see if they were composting enough. And that one, that was scary. Talk about Big Brother-ish there.
Trash is a window into people's lives. And and so, you know, if you were to go through your garbage or my garbage, you might find things that may shed a light on who you are as a person, you know, and what your life is all about. And so there are some privacy issues there. And that was one of the cases that Ethan Blevins won.
And also when Seattle wanted an income tax, when it is clearly in violation of the state constitution, and talk about a waste of money. They've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they say that they still intend to do this, pursuing an income tax that is absolutely incontrovertibly against our state constitution.
Yeah, and that is the frustration, I think, on the part of not only some residents, but also Ethan Blevins. He believes they are going so far beyond the progressive bubble that they're in. It's the bubble within a bubble, as he describes it.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, when we talk about things like gun rights or gun control, that show me a solution that'll fix things that's within the Constitution. But we do have a state and a federal constitution, and too often people in Seattle politics want to ignore that. We're talking with Dave Wagner, Cairo 7 News. His profile of all this is going to be on at 5:30 and then again at 7 o'clock this evening on Cairo 7. And you were telling me, Dave, you talked to both a very liberal Seattleite and, I didn't even know these existed, a very conservative Seattleite about all this stuff.
I did. So the woman who is progressive describes herself as progressive. She's an artist here in town. She said that she thought she was very progressive until she saw some of the things taking place by Seattle City Council. The other man, the man who describes himself as a conservative, his family's been here since the 1800s. And he is just so frustrated, lives in Magnolia, is an architect in this town, and just sees what he believes is just politicians run amok, is how he describes it. Now, Ethan Blevins, this attorney, Dory, is an interesting guy because he's a man of contrasting DNA. So Ethan Blevins is a guy whose mom was an atheist. He found religion, Mormonism, at age 20. He Rand Paul is a guy he probably most aligns himself with politically, but he's also an open borders kind of guy, also believes in criminal justice reform. So to pigeonhole Ethan Blevins, the attorney, is difficult. And why is an attorney from Bellevue representing these cases are going against the city of Seattle? It's because he's representing people in the city of Seattle who are frustrated.
Yeah, well, it's I'm glad somebody's standing up for all the craze or against all the craziness. Dave Wagner, Cairo 7 News, his piece will air at 5:30 this afternoon and then again on their new 7 o'clock evening show this evening. I appreciate you coming in, Dave.
Dory, thanks. Good to be with you.
Dave Wagner, Cairo 7 News. I'd love to hear your thoughts on all this. You can text me at 98973. Email us, go to mynorthwest.com. The Dory Monson Show page. Those come right to us here in the studio, and we have lots more straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show rolls on. Thanks for listening to the Dory Monson Show podcast, brought to you by Industrious Office. Industrious Office is just an amazing workspace right in the heart of downtown Seattle, right on 6th and Lenora, right where everything Seattle has to offer is on your doorstep. And at Industrious, you can start with the right size office and then scale up as your team grows. Go to industriousoffice.com/Cairo, schedule a tour, mention Cairo, receive your first month lease for free.
Hi, I'm Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio. When Cairo Radio listeners miss their favorite show, they find it on demand. Maybe you should be advertising here. Give me a call and I'll help you out. 206-726-6819.
I'll tell you what this whole Amazon and all of the craziness around this region. You know, it's funny. I'll tell you what it means to me personally. Just again yesterday, I get these every single day. Every single day. I get text messages and emails. Dory, if you hate everything around here so much, why don't you just leave? Which is like a perfect leftist reaction to everything. I disagree with you. You should leave. You shouldn't just sit and disagree with me. Just go. Go, I say. I get those every single day. I don't because I truly do love the area in which I grew up. And I think it's savable. And what all this does is, this is going to sound ridiculous. It makes me want to do this show for another 10 years. And I was thinking, maybe another 2 or 3 years. But what are you guys going to do when I'm gone, for crying out loud? What are you going to do when I'm gone? Who's going to honestly? You know, and I'll give you an example. We had an interview scheduled for today's show with the Cascade Bicycle Club, who I've been pretty pointedly critical of. I said they were using gang-like tactics, gangster stuff. There's an email from a couple years ago between two Cascade Bicycle Club members saying, well, let's work with a developer and we'll get a hotel or apartment or condos built in Ballard on Shilshol. And then the maritime industries like Salmon Bay Sand and Gravel, because of noise abatement issues, if we can get a developer to build a hotel or condo, their evening operations will be impacted and eventually they'll just have to sell and go away. That's gangster stuff from a bicycle club. And who else is willing to call them out on this? Honestly, I mean, the people, and here's the thing, I am never going to talk soft about things just so I can try to continue to get access. I would much rather be honest with you and have people, you know, refuse to talk to me. But anyway, the Cascade Bicycle Club, because between that and then between this insane road diet in kind of the Laurelhurst or Wedgwood area, 35th Northeast, and they have a Seattle City Councilman, Rob Johnson, who's just a flat-out liar. Because he recently said, I didn't know the community was opposed. And then the attorney we talked to a few days ago gave us the emails and the text messages that they got through a public records request that showed that Rob Johnson, a year and a half ago, knew that 68% of his constituents were against this road diet, eliminate parking, get rid of the bike or add bike lanes. So will Rob Johnson come on with me? No, because he's a liar. And I call him as a liar. Mike O'Brien's a liar on the city council. But anyway, so the Cascade Bicycle Club. It's insane how a bike club has such outsized influence on the gridlocking of our city. And trying to run a 111-year-old maritime business that has middle-class $70,000 to $80,000 jobs. You don't need a college degree. I mean, it's the kind of business we need. And here I see the Cascade Bicycle Club's conspiring to try to sleazily force them out of business. So we invited Cascade Bicycle Club to come on. They arranged an interview for today, and then at the last minute, they canceled. So all this has done, it's resolved to make me want to stick around to call out all the liars and the sleazes that are running this region. And maybe we'll get it back. Maybe we can transform it back into what it should be before too long. Big Lead 2 next.